introduction of committee bills, and ask that LC 2120 be introduced as a committee bill, and again, without representation to support or opposition.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr has moved the introduction of LC 2120 as a committee bill. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Okay. Let's open a public hearing on Senate Bill 219 and ask that Mike Marsh from ODOT come forward. And Janet, give us the synopsis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 219 would allow the Employment Department to provide information to the Department of Transportation for the purpose of collecting certain debts and delinquent taxes, and specify that such information may include payroll data, date and names and addresses of employers and employees. This information must remain confidential and prohibits any disclosure to collection agencies by the Department of Transportation. Other agencies that have internal collection units do use the Employment Department information for this purpose. There, Mr. Chair, there is a revenue impact statement for Senate Bill 219, and that should be at your place. And the changes in the bill are at the bottom of page 3 and the top of page 4.
Okay, so
language. These are other agencies that exceptions to their public records information for these agencies.
Okay, so I know we don't have LFO here. So on our revenue impact, so these are represented to be increased revenues that was anticipated right over the status quo. Okay. All right. Mr. Marsh, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mike Marsh from the Department of Transportation. Appreciate the chance to talk about Senate Bill 219, which allows us to have access to Oregon Employment Department employing unit records. Quick background on our collection function at the Department of Transportation. We've had responsibility for collections in three areas: motor carriers, our trucks, fuels taxes, and return checks. In 1996, we transferred over from the PUC this function that deals with motor carriers in 2002, and we received the responsibility for delinquent motor vehicle fuel and use fuel taxes. And in May of 2006, we started to receive that responsibility for return checks at DMV. In 06, there was about $11.8 million that was involved in the various accounts. And in terms of collections, we collected about 17% for weight mile, about 20% from fuels tax, and about 30% from the return checks in the brief time we've had that responsibility. So the purpose of the bill, Mr. Chair, is to allow us to go to the Department of Employment to look at the employment records to be able to increase our return on being able to find the debtors. And when we look at our $11.8 million of debt outstanding, we figure about 50% of that debt is from Oregonians. So that means somebody who has an Oregon-based debtor, and therefore, by working with the Department of Employment, we can get access to those records. We already have access to credit records, to DMV records, to other forms of collection approaches on the Internet, but by moving to the employment unit records, that has information about the wage earner's name, the wages paid, employer's name, contact phone numbers. Because of the fact that the folks who are receiving benefits or interested in receiving benefits through the Employment Department will want to have accurate information there, it's considered to be about the most up-to-date way to get information about potential debtors. And obviously, if we can get it faster, it increases the opportunities for us to maybe get to that debtor and more likely to get that paid back. Other agencies have this access, such as the Department of Consumer Business Services, Department of Revenue, Construction Contractors Board. Other agencies have this already. We're asking for that same access and to, at the same time, continue our current practice of ensuring privacy for the people's information that we'd be looking at. So, Mr. Chair, in summary, it would be another tool for us to use. It would increase the amount of debts that would be able to be paid back to the Highway Fund, and we request a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Mr. Marsh. If you could, I think first of all, you've been involved with the program now for a little while. Maybe just give us an example or two of the type of debts that are most prevalent in this process that you have found able to collect, and you know, just kind of give us an idea, a snapshot of what they look like.
Mr. Chair, what we're talking about here is focusing on return checks primarily. But we're also talking about the idea of fuels taxes and motor carrier taxes, which is something that we've dealt with in the past. So if you're talking about a return check, I mean, if a DMV came in and was doing a service for a person for registration or titling, and that check bounced, we're trying to get back out and find where the person is and be able to get that debt paid. If they used a fraudulent account, which is very common, we wouldn't have any information about the person, so we try to track back through the internet, through other credit sources, and the best source is the employment department.
Mm-hmm. So would you say then that, are you saying that the majority of these debts are basically bad checks or, you know, bad instruments?
What we're talking about
of
here
payment?
Is talking about refunded checks or checks that are bounced.
Right, okay. Thank you very much. And then these monies do revert back to the highway fund.
Yes.
And that's always a good thing.
That's correct. The technical process, Mr. Chair, is that the collection costs of DMV are taken from the receipts and then the rest is transferred to the highway fund.
And we have Mr. Byerly from the Employment Department here. If he would like to come up and then get a comment or two, then we'll open to questions about how the Employment Department, as Mr. Marsh has mentioned, the service provided other agencies to collect debts that are owed to them. And identify yourself for the record and just give me a synopsis of how the Employment Department feels about this particular piece.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Tom Byerly. I'm the Assistant Director for Unemployment Insurance for the Employment Department. It'd be our wage records that Department of Transportation seeks to access. As Mr. Marsh indicated, other agencies have this access. We have no concerns with it. Our federal guiding regulations have no problems with this access either. So we have no opposition to this, and there would be a very minimal fee to connect them to our database, and they could proceed from there.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Senator George.
Thank you, Chairman Metzger. Subsection B creates an exception. That says that the Department of Transportation, and this is page 4, lines 2, that the Department of Transportation cannot release this information except, and it says, to the extent that is necessary to carry out the duties. That means this information can be released to private parties. Can you give me an example of a private party? Because engrossed in that is a specific exclusion at any time to a private collection agency. So what other private agencies would you guys be releasing this to other than private collection agencies that would get outside of the hands of the Department of Transportation?
Mr. Chair and Senator George, I can't imagine there'd be any other example of when we would need to do that. Right now we have, in this last biennium, we had a few examples when we were working with private debt collection agencies. Now that we're doing the majority, we're doing that ourselves, and there wouldn't be a need for that. What we're trying to do here is ensure, though, that through the Department of Justice in drafting the bill, we have the same wording as exists for other agencies that have access to the Employment Department records.
Can we follow? Yeah. It always makes me nervous when we're talking, especially in this day and age, about releasing people's information. So we're probably a little more concerned about that this time.
Mm-hmm.
And so we may have allowed a lot more latitude in the past. My question to you is, that would you entertain an amendment to this that says the Department of Transportation cannot release this information outside the department, period?
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator George, let me maybe give a little bit of background about this that may help with that, and then certainly be open to conversation about it. First of all, we're not talking about databases and electronic transfer of information. At ODOT, our collection function is a manual function that using data from other sources, such as the Employment Department. So we never take that data and then download it into some kind of database of our own. So it would never be a situation where the privacy of the citizen might be violated because we let out something and somebody got access to the database. We don't have it electronically. It's retained by these folks. They give us special access. So there's not a time when we would have anything out there at risk of being inappropriately used electronically by the public. All we're talking about is a limited amount where a person would look at that screen, see that there's a phone number to contact, call that person on the phone and get access to them, or to call their employer in order to get access and find out about what the wage rate is in order to either get those funds indirect or be able to follow through with them directly. So there isn't a record or trail that would allow for the kind of risk I think the senator is pointing at mainly here. Does that help?
Yeah, can I?
Yeah.
I guess the point is that the way the statute's being crafted, as I see it on lines 44 and 45 on page 3, is that we're actually giving you quite a bit. I mean, you're probably right in practicality that you guys don't download these things, but I think we're giving you the authorization to download these pieces of information, and at some time it may happen that you would. And I guess I'm with you. I totally support the concept of this piece of legislation, so don't take it that I'm not. But for me, I'm just a little more hypersensitive all the time about information being released at all on these things. And so I'd just be a lot more comfortable if we just said that you guys could not release this to any private party and it had to be used exclusively for this use. I guess that's what I'm saying. I was just wondering if that was something we could actually go towards.
Okay. Mr. Chair and Senator George, I'm going to turn around and look at the fuels tax manager and just make sure there's not some kind of issue there. The concern I have is Department of Justice and the change of how we would deal with this particular agency as compared to others and whether that would start a standard that might be a concern.
If you'd like to join us, too, that's okay.
Well, let me give it a quick shot, and then we'll bring Maureen to the table in a moment if we need to. What the manager of the unit is pointing out is, Mr. Chair and Senator George, the next line on line 5 of the bill on that fourth page says, notwithstanding the exception described in paragraph B of this subsection, the Department of Transportation may not disclose any information received to any private collection agency. You mentioned that. I wasn't sure that internalized your concern.
Well, Mr. Chair, if I could, I guess that actually raised a bigger alarm because, in essence, what it's saying is that you could, if the Department of Transportation could justify it that it was necessary to carry out the Department of Transportation's duties, it could release it to any private party other than private collection agencies. And all I'm saying is that I appreciate the attempt there, but it actually seems to narrow it down to one private party, which is a private collection agency, but it allows for the department to pretty much free reign beyond that if it views that it's necessary to carry out the Department of Transportation's duties. And I'm just a little concerned about that because I'm always concerned about private information like employment information being spread anywhere beyond. Mm-hmm. And I guess a few sessions ago, we didn't have anywhere near the identity theft that we've had in the past.
Mr. Chair and Senator George, I don't think we view it as a concern for us. I think the only issue would be possibly legislative counsel or Department of Justice to ensure we haven't started a different standard in one area of the law for one agency that might be different for others. But if the committee was comfortable with that perspective from the standpoint of us doing our job, I don't think that's an issue.
I don't have that big of an objection, but depending on what you want to do.
One thing, just to point out from history on that, Senator George, one thing I'm aware of, the lines that Mr. Marsh was referring to about the private collection agency and, you know, why would that be in there, is that we had a period of time, and subsequent there may be other periods of times, in which there has been legislation for revenue issues that authorize the ability of agencies to use outside collection agencies. And so this language has been placed in some to make it very clear that even if we authorize that private people can represent the government, because the legislature says you can use a private collection agency, that it would not be allowed for this particular use because they have used private vendors in the past, different agencies have. And that's why that was put in there, so that it wouldn't be, I don't know if that's helpful on that at all. But.
And clearly, Mr. Chair and Senator George, we're indicating on the record that that's not our intent and that we have a very tight and narrow use that we're planning for this information.
Other questions? Okay. Thank you. Is there anybody else would like to testify on 219? Not signed up, but I'm just making that observation and opportunity. Senator George, what is your comfort level?
Well, I guess if the rest of the committee is completely comfortable with the legislation, then I'm not gonna.
I don't think it's a big deal to get an amendment drafted, Mr. Chair.
I think what we'll do then is, before we draft the amendment, let's ask the department and Janet and with legislative counsel to address the concern that was brought up, as well as, you know, can we craft an amendment that does not conflict and create an additional problem? And if that is the case, then let's do that. If not, then bring the bill back and explain why that would create a additional burden. And in either case, I think the committee then would have a greater comfort level going forward. Is that okay? And then we'll try to do this expeditiously.
I don't want to create a huge problem.
No, you're not creating a problem at all. I think we got two important points, and this should be easily resolved one way or the other. And at least if we can do an amendment, we'll do it that way. If not, we'll have the on the record why we can't do that, and have the will of the legislature is what we intend to do. So that's absolutely fine. Let's close public hearing on Senate Bill 219. We'll try to bring that back soon, and we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 220. And Janet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 220 is also at the request of the Department of Transportation, and would authorize the department to issue warrants for the collection of debt where a judgment has been issued or the amount of debt has been determined in an administrative proceeding. It includes the authority to place liens on property and to garnish wages or tax refunds. Mr. Chair, this also is a process used by other agencies that have internal collection. And the agency is already authorized to issue warrants and garnishments for collection of weight mile taxes from trucking companies, fuel taxes from fuel dealers, but not for return checks or unpaid civil penalties, is my understanding. So thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 220 does have a positive revenue impact, but the agency can talk to you about, but we do not have a revenue impact statement.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Mr. Marsh. Welcome back. It's been a long time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And because it has been a long time, I won't go through the background information, but rather directly to the bill. Again, Mike Marsh from the Department of Transportation. Appreciate your time. This bill is to allow us to have warrant authority for liquidated and delinquent debts. What we're focusing on here is about the $1.6 million in those types of debts through return checks that are outstanding. We have a process we can go through that involves small claims court, issuing a garnishment, involves attorneys, get triple damages and cost recovery attempted, but the costs are significant when you go through that kind of process. In essence, it's cost prohibitive to use that approach. What the bill allows us to do, or would allow us to do, is to issue a warrant if the debt meets one of two standards. There are nine standards that are listed in the accounting manual. We're asking to meet two of them and not have to deal with it. We will not deal with the other ones. In other words, we're being extremely restrictive on the types of criteria that will have to be used. Those two criteria are either that a judgment has been issued or that the amount of the debt has been established through an administrative hearing. So they're two external things. Instead of just looking at our own internal fee structure, we're saying something must happen externally in order to allow us access to doing it this approach. Currently, the department has authority to issue warrants and garnishments for weight mile tax and for fuels taxes, but not for these kind of return checks from DMV. So it allows us to move into that area, similar to the Department of Employment, Revenue Department, Human Services, Consumer Business Services, other agencies that have debts owed to them. This way we can move ahead and do it quickly, expeditiously, without having to hire an attorney, and the change would allow us to take collective action and do it in a cost-effective way. So, Mr. Chair, again, it's a bill or a function that would allow us to get access to records that are an approach that the other state agencies have. We're being restrictive in terms of how we would use it by requiring an external judgment or an external administrative hearing that has established the kind of debt owing, and we request your positive action on the bill. Open to any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Marshall. I think I'll start with our committee administrator. Jan had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Marsh, this is really about both bills. Are you just talking about in the collections unit things that relate to trucks and trucking and fuels, or is this for any return check that someone from registering their own
vehicle? Mr. Chair and Ms. Atkins, we're talking about checks that are returned in the department. The majority of what we're talking about are DMV checks. And so that's the major target that we're talking about here. Right now we have the ability to do it in motor carrier and for fuels tax checks. We want to be able to extend that to DMV checks also.
That's your question.
Mr. Chair, that would be even small checks. These aren't necessarily large
correct
amounts that are from dealers or from trucking companies.
It can be both, Mr. Chair and Ms. Atkins. If they were from the business side of DMV where they work with large businesses, it could be a larger amount.
Right.
In some cases, it can be very small.
Okay.
And obviously, as part of our collection practice, we evaluate the amount of time we're going to put into the smaller checks.
Mm-hmm. Questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
You really got to have Senate Bill 219 in order for Senate Bill 220 to make any sense, correct? Because you got to have the employment information, and that's what Senate Bill 219 really allows you to have better access to in order to facilitate what you're asking for in 220.
Mr. Chair and Senator Starr, in terms of the effectiveness of the program, that's true, but in terms of them being tied together, per se, they're not tied together because this allows us to take actions that are separate from 219. So I think they are two separate issues, but obviously both of them relate to the increased effectiveness of the program.
Senator George.
Thank you, Chair. Is there been any conversation, and this is kind of a picky point, but with the sheriffs and the county clerks as far as, because if we start talking about small transactions, the cost of them is going to be fairly significant. I assume if you guys started doing this a lot. Now, on larger things, obviously, it makes sense because there's, but if we're starting to talk about going after people for DMV fees, that could be a great deal of work for our county sheriffs and our county clerk's departments. Any discussion with them?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator George, that was a consideration for us. We looked at the situation with sheriffs, and we do pay for their time.
Okay.
So any impact and workload, plus it's a pretty small amount. We're estimating the total amount is about 500 checks that come in. The ones that we would actually use this practice for would be at most 10% of them. So it's not going to be a huge impact when we think about the number of sheriffs.
But you do reimburse them.
We do reimburse also,
right.
Yes.
Any questions? Do you have any concern about moving forward on this one this time? Okay, let's open a public hearing on Senate Bill 220.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And open a work session on Senate Bill 220.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Move Senate Bill 220 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 220 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Any objection? So moved. And I'll ask Senator Starr, trying to get my sequence down right, to carry this one, and it'll be a while. I would assume that 219 will probably go with that at the time, by the time we actually get to it. So, okay, let's open up the public hearing on Senate Bill 91. Janet.
Something in there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have it here somewhere.
Does this help you? Or do you have other additional notes?
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 91 is at the request of the Construction Contractors Board and would require a licensed contractor to notify the Construction Contractors Board if there's changes to names, addresses of owners, officers, managers, members, trustees, or responsible managing individuals. Those changes are in Section 1, and Section 2 has a change that if the applicant is a trust, then it requires the name of the trustees on the application form. There are already provisions, as you can see in the deleted language, that require notification of the board for any changes in partnerships or corporate officers, and this bill extends that to these other individuals that have control or responsibility for a company. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Smith, Mr. Boyd, right, come forward, please.
Chair Metzger and members of the committee, my name is Craig Smith. I'm with the Construction Contractors Board. We're handing out the written testimony on this bill. It's a fairly simple issue. It has to do with the ability of the agency to hold human beings that own construction businesses accountable for their bad debts as we adjudicate them or the court system does. Today, corporations have to notify us if the name of their corporate officers and owners. But LLCs are new enough that that wasn't contained in the law. What this bill would do is include LLCs in that list as well as other business entities, the purpose of which, again, is so the Construction Contractors Board would know the owners of those businesses and be able to hold them accountable for their bad acts, if any.
Would you like to add something to that?
Mr. Boyd is here to answer questions in case you...
Okay, so I think you said it, but this is how I read it. So what we're doing is we're not really changing any of the provisions of the law, but adapting the law to the reality of there's different forms of business organization now and making sure that they all, whether they're incorporated or partnerships or partnership LLCs or corporate LLCs, that everybody falls under the same existing law.
Chair Metzger, that's correct.
Okay. Questions for either gentleman?
I have one that seems interesting. I just want to know the rationale for. It's the addition of under this chapter in Section 1. So apparently previous to adding those three words, the information that we had in this particular chapter applied to other chapters. I don't know. That's curious that you add those three words right here. I don't know. You want to explain that?
Chair Metzger and Senator Starr, it's not something that the Construction Contractors Board asked for. I have to assume this is something that Legislative Council added. I don't know that it changes anything. We certainly didn't ask for any other changes.
I think Janet has something on that.
Mr. Chair, I was just going to assume also that it's a cleanup clarification from Legislative Council.
Okay.
We can find out.
You okay with that?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
You want to testify? How come you didn't sign up?
Well, you're late.
Well, yeah.
You're just lucky we didn't do this bill first.
Should we let Mr. Ford testify?
I don't know.
I vote yes. Okay. All right. You get a one pass.
Thank you.
You've used it. You know, it's kind of like the you can throw the flag in the games now.
Right.
You know, for if you charge the timeout, you got one free pass for being late.
His way, he's not charged the timeout.
Yeah.
We don't.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I appreciate your courtesy. My name is Steve Bufori. I'm here representing the Oregon Remodelers Association today. This may seem like a small matter to you, but it actually, because of the nature of the industry, which comprises a lot of very small organizations, business organizations, maybe two or three, four people even in a business, and it's very easy for them to start one business, change a name, and start another one. And although the vast majority of people who do this are operating within the law and within good ethics, there are a few that aren't, and it's been a very, very long, difficult task that the Construction Contractors Board has had trying to catch these folks. And anything we can do to make it possible to go after people who try to get out of evading the law by changing their name or changing their organization is strongly supported by the industry.
Thank you. And I believe that is one of our task force bills, is it not, that we are having in the House side? To try and deal with that issue that will be coming here.
So
we'll look for you on that one when we actually get that bill and make sure that we have crossed the T's and dotted the I's correctly, because I know that was an issue the committee talked about last year. One of the reasons the task force was formed is to make sure that just changing the name on a sheet of paper doesn't change the paper trail of the conduct of the person or unfairly charge other good members of an industry because of the bad works of others. So appreciate you pointing
Thank
that
you.
Out. Anybody else would wish to testify on Senate Bill 91? Okay. Let's close public hearing on Senate Bill 91, open a work session on Senate Bill 91.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 91 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 91 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Any objection? Sort of, we'll just do it that way. And Mark Senator George excused, and if he comes in before we come up, we'll give him an opportunity to vote. Let's open a public hearing on Senate Bill 94. And I think we have the same two gentlemen. This one just because we have the identical wording clause, I just want to hold on to it. Welcome.
Thank you. Chair Metzger, members of the committee, my name is Craig Smith. I'm joined today by Bill Boyd. This is really just a housekeeping measure. It has to do with our complaint system. It handles contract disputes. Mr. Boyd handles that section, and with your permission, I'd like him to explain exactly what the bill does.
Please.
Chair Metzger, members of the committee, my name is Bill Boyd. I manage the dispute resolution section for the Construction Contractors Board. This bill doesn't actually make any substantive change to the law. What it does is it changes the terminology to better describe the service that we offer. Currently, we call what people file with us a claim, and the problem with that is that people think that this is like the kind of thing that you do with an insurance company when somebody bangs into your car. You go down, you file a claim with the insurance company, they do a short investigation, and a couple of weeks later you get a check, or they tell you to send it to this shop and get it fixed. But it's a process that goes pretty quick because it's the insurance company's money. And that's not what we do, because what we're doing is if at the end of this process, we may order the contractor to pay not government money, not our money, but the contractor's money to a citizen. Mm-hmm. And because of that, we're actually do very much similar service as the court system does, and it carries all of the due process requirements that the court system does, including the requirement that the claimant come in with and bear the burden of proof and prove by preponderance of the evidence that they're entitled to that money. And so the process takes longer. People are certainly more frustrated by it because of the length of time it takes, but we're trying to tell them that this is not an insurance claim, that this is something else. And so what we've done is we've gone through our statutes and changed claim to complaint. That also means that claimant gets changed to complainant, which is a little bit longer word. And I will also say that I saw at least in one place where the legislative council decided to do a little cleanup of the language themselves, and that's in there too.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Chair, can I ask a question?
Yes, please, Senator.
So, everywhere in the bill where it adds complaint or substitute complaint for claim, or adds complainant, that's the language that you all have suggested. And the other changes in the bill are ones that legislative council thought were important or cleanup.
There was a few places where the word complaint was used, and we had to try to write around that to clarify, not in the context of our dispute resolution program, but in other contexts. For instance, in the context of the slow pay statute, and we had to write around that to try to clarify that. So there are some places where you'll see other changes, but that's essentially what we're doing.
Okay. Any other questions?
Okay.
Would anybody else like to testify on Senate Bill 94 at this time? Okay, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 94. And gentlemen, I think the committee is fine with this bill, but we're going to hold on to it for a while. We have a few, we got lots of minutes, but I'm going to use just a few minutes to ask Mr. Smith to give us a brief overview of the bills that we are expecting to come over from the House, so on this subject from the task force and others. So just kind of an opportunity to know what's coming.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Again, Craig Smith, Contractors Board. What we're handing out now is a list of Construction Contractors Board pre-session filed bills, and it's divided into three sections. Many of these are concepts that the Construction Claims Task Force has wrestled with over the summer and is now working with Legislative Council to draft into bills. We did not know what would come out of the task force, and so we went ahead and did pre-session file some things that were important to the Construction Contractors Board. Some of those you've already heard. Senate Bill 90 would increase the bond. Most of you are aware that the surety bond for general contractors is $15,000. For specialty contractors, it's $10,000. And for the very smallest contractors, it's $5,000. What this bill would do is add $5,000 to each category. Senate Bill 92 is a bill that would require the board to set minimum standards for written contracts. Currently, we have a requirement that construction contractors use a written contract, but in some cases those contracts are pretty unorthodox, and they're not as good as they could be. So we'd like to set some very minimum standards. We do this by rule, obviously in sunlight, and I think we could help both contractors and consumers. We'd also like to publish what we think might be a fair contract. Some folks on the consumer side are writing contracts that are very, very aggressively protecting consumers, and that's great. Others folks on the contractor side are doing a similar activity, and frankly, I'm worried that there's a bit of a disconnect regarding what's fair. And I'd like the board to have your blessing to publish what we think might be a fair contract so that if parties wanted to use it, they could. Mm-hmm. Senate Bill 97 would require contractors to maintain a signed copy of the consumer notice. You know, since 1972, the law that started the Builders Board required consumers to receive a notice that gave them their rights. It used to be called a summary of the statute. Today it's called a consumer notice. Sadly, I have to report to you that probably less than 10% of the time that notice is being sent to consumers when it should be. There's as much as a $5,000 penalty that can be adjudicated against a contractor. That's not motivating contractors to pay attention to that. And we think that perhaps some additional strengthening of the regulations would help that. House Bill 2110 is a similar requirement. This, however, would add a little twist, and that would be if a contractor fails to give that notice, then the length of time to file a complaint with the Construction Contractors Board dispute resolution section would be doubled. And the rationale there is that it's that notice that tells a consumer that they only have 1 year to file. If they don't have that notice, how are they supposed to know that? So we'd at least like to have a discussion regarding that. And I think this is a concept that's contained in the task force in a broader context. 2107 is an idea. I think I understand that this committee has looked at for another licensing agency. May not have received a great favor thus far, but we think it's an idea worth mentioning. It's the concept of if a contractor doesn't pay, in this case, if the contractor doesn't pay a court judgment or arbitration, they'd be obligated to let the contractor's board know. And the rationale is that the statute currently allows the agency, and I think appropriately so, to discipline a contractor if they don't pay a debt like that. Consumers and other contractors expect licensees to pay their construction debts, and if we don't know what they are, we can't hold them accountable for that. And frankly, it would be problematic and expensive for the agency to wrestle those records from the local counties and appropriate jurisdictions where they currently reside. So we'd like to talk about that with you. 2108 would require contractors to notify the CCB in the event of bankruptcy. This is a very sensitive issue. I think it's time for us to bring it to you, at least again, to have a conversation. I can tell you that consumers complain to us vehemently that contractors that have damaged them have damaged others over and over again. And they want to know, why do we continue to allow this? Well, the bankruptcy laws are very very tough. I can't tell you that I understand them all. We have special assistant attorney generals that work with us on this. Frankly, what it does is it does allow a contractor, if they do run into trouble, to get out of that debt and to get a fresh start. But what some would require or suggest that the contractors board should do is to at least tell the public that this is a licensee who is starting over. This is a licensee who's been in trouble before. If you want to use them, great, but we're going to tell you that they filed bankruptcy. 2113 is another controversial issue. It's an issue that we've dealt with many, many times. House Speaker Merkley 4 years ago dealt with this issue, I think, effectively for home builders. It has to do with the pay-twice problem, and would like to take this one step further. Right now, for remodeling contractors, anything under $50,000, you're still susceptible to that pay-twice problem. And, of course, consumers don't understand why that is. Many folks would suggest that it's just plain unfair to have a consumer have to pay twice for the same goods or services. Senate Bill 91 you've dealt with just today. Senate Bill 93 would set a minimum time for a revoked license. In some states, other than Oregon, if you lose your license, you can't just go down and file and get a new one. In Oregon, you can. So if we take a license away for whatever reason, if a party wants to go down and just start over again, if they have the fee and they have the bond and insurance, we must relicense them. We think that if you authorize us to take a license away, it's for a reason, and we'd like to set that maybe for a year or two, put that person out of business. House Bill 2111 would strengthen the RMI requirements. RMI stands for Responsible Managing Individual. That's the person that takes the education and then takes the test. And the testimony that you'll hear from us is that in some cases, the RMIs, which have to be officers or members of the limited liability company, or in some cases employees, are not running the business. And as a matter of fact, there's just a bit of a cottage industry, I'm afraid, of individuals who qualify to authorize a applicant to be a licensee, and we believe people are selling that. And so some applicants are putting these individuals on their application, indicating that they're part of the business, but in fact they're not running the business. We would like to change that. 2112 would require contractors to notify CCB in the event that they lose their liability insurance coverage. You know, liability insurance has been a heck of a problem for construction contractors. It's a little bit better today than it was 2 years ago. I think the task force was partly put together to try to address this issue. We'll let the report speak for itself as to how it addressed it. But our problem today is that although an applicant must provide proof of liability insurance coverage at the beginning of their licensure, there's no requirement that the licensee tell us if they lose their coverage. And, of course, it makes sense that perhaps the insurer could tell us about that. But, in fact, the insurance division and others have indicated to us that that is not a possible solution in Oregon for a variety of reasons. It has to do with the ability of dealing with out-of-state insurance providers. And this particular bill currently needs to be amended, but it would at the very least require a licensee to let the CCB know so we can let the public know that this contractor doesn't have insurance. And if that occurs, we would take the license away until the contractor has a proper license. 2120 would require contractors to maintain a signed copy of the information notice to owner about construction liens. Some of you may know what this document is. This is the one that contractors give at the time they enter into a contract, and it tells consumers that they're in jeopardy to the pay-twice situation. Other bills that we have include Senate Bill 94, which we just talked about, Senate Bill 95, which would seek clarification that agency may charge a fee for a certified home inspector initial certification. Interestingly, you had this a few days ago. We're not testifying about that, but just for your information, there was a question, I think, by Senator Montes Anderson, I believe, regarding I hope I've got this right. Are you receiving sufficient funds for the amount of service that you provide these folks? And we ran those numbers. We're going to provide some evidence next time we see you. The amount of revenue we get from home inspectors is about 0.76 of all total revenue, so about 7,500. And the amount of service we provide, according to our statistics, is about double that. So we're underfunding that program currently. Senate Bill 96 would increase the $50 cap on the home inspector testing fees, and you've already seen that. House Bill 2100 would reorganize 701.055, which is one of those statutes that's kind of grown over the last 20 years. A lot of stuff has been thrown into it. It's disjointed. This would not change any policy, but simply make it a little easier for you to read and for us to administer. Can I answer any questions?
Okay. Again, these are bills that we are likely to see, the ones we haven't already seen, the House bills, and provide you just an overview on that. Is there just any preliminary questions before we allow our folks to go? Okay, thank you for the overview. We'll look forward to those. One question. Where are you in having those bills drafted? One of our concerns is because they have to move through the process of when that's going to actually take place in the House. Do you know where we are with those in the drafting process?
Yeah. Senator Metzger, Bill Boyd is working with Andrea Simmons from Building Codes Division on that. I'll let him answer that question.
Senator Metzger, Bill Boyd for the Dispute Resolution Manager for the Construction Contractors Board. I would expect that, I can't promise this, but I think that by the end of next week, I think they'll be drafted. They're being drafted as we speak. I know that the legislative council is aware that there's some urgency about this, and I'm hoping that they'll be coming out pretty soon.
Okay, well, one of the reasons, you know, that we've held Senate Bill 94 is that it could use some of those things in this bill, and so just keep us posted if there's any issues there. If we could expedite some of that for you, we would be in a position to do that. But we certainly don't want to step on our friends over there as things are moving. But time is going to be short, and so I want to make sure that happens. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And before we go, what I would like to do is ask unanimous consent to allow Senator George, if he so would like, to vote on Senate Bill 91 because he was out of the room at the time, and if he would like to cast a vote. Is there any objections to allowing Senator George to vote on Senate Bill 91? Hearing none. Senator George,
aye.
How would you vote on Senate Bill 91?
Aye.
Senator George votes aye, so if you would exchange the excuse for aye.
I need a carrier.
And the carrier that will be, I guess it'll be me. Just put me down. Okay. Janet, give us a preview of Monday, and we'll be dismissed.
Okay, thank you. Committee members, on Monday should be two interesting bills. There will be controversy about both of them. Hearings only on Senate Bill 85, which applies utility pole attachment regulations to government bodies right now. If you're a private person tapping into a utility pole, you go through regulations, but government bodies do not have to they pay for the ability, but they don't have to go through the regulation process that other parties do. And the government bodies aren't going to like it. And the Senate Bill 86 gives PUC authority over complaints regarding telephone communication charges. And again, that's a change to the complaints going directly to the telephone companies. We'll also have an overview of an organization called Manufacturing 21 Coalition, and it's a coalition that's working on workforce issues to try to get at both a high school level and community college and college level more manufacturing training and education for the, to turn out a workforce that can be used in those industries.
Okay, good. So this will be our opportunity. We have missed the first couple of weeks of session not to have all our great telecom people in the room, and we believe it's time to reacquaint ourselves with them.
Right.
So Monday, I think you'll see more people in the room than we've seen in the last couple of times, and that'll be a good introduction. So thank you for everybody being so attentive so we got things through. We're adjourned.